And joining us now, Lee Carlaw, the lead meteorologist for the National Weather Service here in Chicago. Lee, thanks for joining us here this morning.
Not a problem, John. Thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you guys did an incredible job last night. You do great on your social media channels and alerting folks not only what was happening, but the changing scenarios throughout the day, still warning people that even though the storms didn't materialize earlier in the afternoon, that there was still a strong threat later on. Walk us through those couple of hours and what happened to create such a powerful storm that ended up creating so much damage.
Yeah, you know, by and large, actually, you know, the expectation actually the during the daylight hours was that we might actually see more thunderstorm activity than ultimately we ever did. It was a kind of a remnant disturbance that was left over from overnight convection the previous night that had moved out of kind of southeast Iowa and central Illinois. But there's just lots of cloud cover around, and so those storms were never able to fully materialize. But kind of as a direct result of that, kind of left the environment in kind of pristine shape, very unstable, very humid, not worked over by any convection there. And so we had a secondary disturbance that actually moved through late in the evening and early overnight hours, and that kind of rolled into an environment that obviously, as I had said, hadn't been worked over by previous thunderstorms. It just had a lot of fuel available to sort of fire these rotating storms that we had.
I'm blown away at how real-time the information is now compared to probably 10, 15, 20 years ago. Meteorologists on all the stations kind of pinpointing where they saw rotation and even talk about that they could see, you know, through their radar debris 10,000 feet in the air. How recent is this technology to be so quick to be able to help pinpoint where these tornadoes are in the current moment?
Yeah, you know, the upgrade to what's called dual polarization radar technology obviously had been, you know, in available to kind of the military for a long time. That was introduced to our weather radars, you know, as early as about 2008, 2009 or so. Those were rolled out nationally and nationwide here. And the unique aspect of the dual polarization technology is that it's not only able to see stuff moving kind of horizontally, but also in a vertical direction. And so from that, we're able to sort of parse out what is rain and hail, and then possibly, unfortunately, in these situations, debris. So from trees, structures that have been lofted by thunderstorms, and that we saw that play out front and center with the radar data last night.
Ed, were you watching it live in terms of, I don't know if you were on the clock or not, but I'm sure you're really obviously into the weather situation. What, from a personal perspective, I mean, is there a fear that goes over you when you realize this is in a populated area and this is not, you know, just some weak tornado perhaps that's going through? I mean, what's going through your mind as you're seeing this data play out?
Yeah, you know, it's definitely along the lines of a pretty scary scenario. Fast moving tornadoes embedded within a line of storms. I mean, these were moving 40, 50, 60 miles per hour in the middle of the night. Again, as you mentioned, through densely populated suburbs of Chicago. It's definitely a really dangerous scenario there. And while we have heard of instances of injuries, some critical in this instance, the fact that there aren't more, I think, is a testament to, the preparedness of the folks out here. Hey, they have a place and a way to get the warnings. They know what they mean. They know what to do. Monitoring social media, there was a lot of information that was put out on our feeds and media feeds about this in real time. So I think that that really kind of helps kind of get and amplify the message to folks there. Definitely a really bad time of night. It's never a good time for tornadoes, but overnight in the evening hours is definitely a big problem. Unfortunately, with the light of day, we are seeing some signs of potentially pretty significant damage.
When I know that there's like this, you don't want to overuse the sirens, because I think there is this sense sometimes that people are just, they get used to them and, okay, yeah. But like, how pinpointed to the tornado are the sirens activated? I guess that's a strange question to ask, but I guess what I'm wondering is, are we better now that if you hear a siren, that means get to the basement? It's not like before, maybe, where they would activate more sirens because they didn't quite know where the tornado was. Have we gotten better about pinpointing them and only activating sirens that really need to be activated?
Yeah, so from a warning standpoint, when the tornado warning from our office goes out to the world, those over the last, you know, several decades have gotten a lot better. Obviously, we moved from county-based warnings to storm-based warnings, and just by that nature, we're able to sort of target specific areas that are under the primary threat. Now, when it comes to outdoor warning sirens, that actually comes down to sort of the local emergency managers. Okay. We work closely with them, obviously, as well in our sort of preparedness campaigns, but they come up with their internal sort of decisions about when and how they activate their sirens. So some will use them for significant straight-line winds and very large hail. And so that's why we kind of tend to call them outdoor warning sirens and not necessarily tornado sirens, because they're not necessarily designed specifically to alert for that threat. But I can tell you, living in the Downers Grove area last night, that they did go off, and for good reason. There were some tight couplets in the area, and I think that that hopefully certainly helped some people kind of come to the realization, hey, this is a real threat here. We're hearing these sirens. Obviously, you have a warning, but maybe you're going and looking for some additional information, and maybe that's the secondary or tertiary piece of information that's necessary to make your decision.
What happens today, and what do you use to determine how strong this tornado was? Is it signs of the damage? Are there telltale signs of what would produce or what looks like stronger winds than other winds? I mean, how do you guys determine what happened in the aftermath?
Yeah, so the ultimate metric is a ground survey. And so what will happen is meteorologists from the office will go out, and they will literally walk the entire length of the damage path. And if you're not familiar with it, the Fujita scale for the longest time was sort of is that kind of ranking from 0 through 5, ranking the intensity of tornadoes. So that was altered a little bit back in about 2007, 2008, and is now known as the Enhanced Fujita Scale. And the methodology behind that was scientists, engineers, structural engineers came together and were able to determine specific wind speeds associated with levels of damage to houses, to trees, soft or hardwood. So we have dozens and dozens of what we call damage indicators that we can then backtrack out of that what the intensity rating, as it were, of the tornado is.
Do you have any... I know the worst question to ask a scientist is, if you had to take a guess, because that's not what you guys like to do, but do you have any sense early morning just from aerial shots from some of the news helicopters, work you've done on your own, about how wide this pathway was, how strong this tornado was, or is it just too early to tell?
It's still a bit too early to tell, and we're going to have to sort of rely on the damage survey crew to get that kind of granular with the information. But we will hopefully have some information about that, where the starting point, the time, the width, the overall max intensity, after survey crews kind of get back later today, this afternoon and evening here. The radar, don't get me wrong, is it's an incredibly powerful tool, and we've mentioned the dual polarization technology there, and that actually is able to sense debris and how high it's lofted into the atmosphere. And preliminary, information going back and looking at some of this data suggests that it could have been as high as, 15, 16,000 feet, which, based on some historical research, is pretty significant, especially for a tornado embedded in a line like this.
All right, Lee, I know you guys will be hard at work, and I know that we learned something from each one of these things, and hopefully we continue to improve and get better, and we certainly have over the last 10 or 15 years. Good luck, and thanks for all your hard work. If you don't follow the National Weather Service Chicago on Twitter, on Facebook, whatever it is, do so, because they put out important information in real time, and if the power goes out, you're likely maybe still able to have some cell phone service, and that is huge in a moment like that, Lee.
Yep, absolutely. And thank you so much, John, for the time. Really appreciate you having us on here.
Yeah, we appreciate you too. All right, thanks so much.